Okay, so my talk is on the vow in harmony with friends and brethren. I accept this ordination. And when Pranya Devi asked me to talk on a harmony, I actually thought she was joking. I think of myself as a rather kind of checkered history of harmonising. So. Better explain that. So I moved into a community 6 years ago, Sukhavati community, I suppose I thought that harmony was something that nice Buddhists do. So I had this idea that I didn't want to be a nice Buddhist, and that I'd like to air my grievances very honestly. Anyway, thankfully for all involved, I've started to value harmony. And yeah, so I 6 years in community should give me something to say about that. So, same as yourself, I googled harmony. That's what we do, isn't it? And, there's actually beautiful definitions, but the one I pick out is the state of being in agreement or concord, with synonyms of a peacefulness, amicability, friendship, fellowship, comradeship, solidarity, cooperation, understanding, and consensus, and so on. And the Bodhisattva employs the four Samgrahavastus, or means of unification, to create Sangha. So I'm going to talk about harmony in terms of these four those four things. Based on Bhante's summaries of that in the Inconceivable Emancipation. But before I do that, I'm going to just talk a little bit about this harmony. So I'll just say a couple of words, excuse my kind of self-revelationary start here. But these 6 years in the community, I will say there have been undoubtedly some of the most important years of my life, the context for ordination, joining the order, and so on. And I'll definitely admit to a lot of anxiety and kind of tension during those during a lot of times in Sukhavati. And what I would say during those times is that I'm not sure these are my kind of people. I'm not sure. I would try to blame my anxiety away in a way. And what stood out for me are dinner times. Dinner times, I'd often just think, why am I feeling so tense? And, I kind of think of it as like, at work I'm somebody, and then I come back to dinner time, and that doesn't kind of work anymore in Sukhavati. That being somebody doesn't quite translate. So I just find it very confusing. And, so then my natural inclination would be to try and impose myself. So I think maybe in hindsight there's something threatening about harmony. There might be something threatening about harmony, or certainly I kind of I got a kind of aesthetic sense of it. It wasn't that I couldn't see it, but I'd either kind of think I was outside of it, or place myself outside of it. So I could kind of see it, and it could kind of look attractive, but something a bit kind of separate from me. I think open communication can be threatening, can't it? You're in this kind of gap, where you're just not in control, are you? If you're in open communication, you're not in control, and that might just, there's a sense of threat to individuality there, or this kind of wanting to be special. And, I want to say is aversion definitely puts you outside of harmony. So, usually that's a response to feeling hurt or a sense of being overlooked or kind of impression. And so I suppose the point is when we're hurt, how can we take responsibility for that and kind of get back into relationship? How can we value non-blaming? How can we value non-blaming? And it occurred to me that's increasingly a countercultural that we are in a broader a culture of or prevailing culture of kind of blaming others, and that has and that has this attendant flip side of victimisation. So that's what we're operating, and we're not immune to that. We are kind of, after all, kind of bombarded with that. So we will fall out, and I suppose what I would like to say is that make a little distinction is that you don't have to. Resolution of harmony is not the same as resolution of difference. Definitely not necessary to resolve our differences of opinion to restore harmony. Okay, so I just want to say that. But obviously, with a footnote, that it's very, very helpful to know where people are coming from, isn't it? Because then you can kind of get back into some relationship with them. So I think agreement or concord, as a definition I'm taking, is a much deeper level than differences of opinion. It's actually something to do with a shared humanity, a recognition of shared humanity. So I'll go to more surer ground with the actual Dharma of Bantay, which is the first Samgravahastu, or means of unification that the Bodhisattva employs, which is Dana. And so what Bantay says on this, to paraphrase, is generosity helps the Bodhisattva to establish positive contact between people, creating spiritual friendship, helping them to form spiritual communities. The spiritual community is characterized by the constant exchange of presence among its members. And what I'd like to say is that it's also characterized by a willingness to give. So not just giving, but a willingness to give, and a readiness to give. And that's in community life. That's transferable to everything. Washing up, willingness to clean on community night when you don't feel like it. To cook, to help someone remove their furniture or whatever it is. Or to listening to someone. So it's a kind of there's this willingness that we can kind of try to cultivate. I think a willingness to give, and I've got a little. A story to illustrate that. I did these renovation projects. A few people in the room that were around when I did these in the Sukhavati community. And I'll talk about the second one first. So the second one first, I definitely did have an appetite or enthusiasm or willingness to try to get people involved. So I kind of emphasised that, if you see what I mean. And I was kind of rotoring people in to work together and make sure they had what they needed to do the job and knew what they needed to do. And at the end of that, I got a round of applause at the dinner table, which I found embarrassing actually, but also very heartening, very, very heartening, because I feel it was like recognition that I've moved on from the first renovation project. the first renovation project didn't go very well. It's fine, all the tiles went up and everything was fine, it looked fine. I definitely hadn't got a willingness to form consensus. So I found consensus rather tiresome I didn't really just want to do it. And so I kind of isolated myself. And as I became more isolated, I kind of gave in a kind of begrudging kind of way. You see, I kind of just pushed on kind of bullishly in that way. So I suppose I'm talking about that because one included this willingness to give and one didn't. The first means of unification is generosity, including this willingness to give. And it's not just giving and not just getting things done. So I move on to the second Samgravahastu, means of unification. by Bodhisattva, which is loving speech. So a loving speech, affectionate speech, pleasing speech, a pleasant speech. And what Bhante says on this is that the Bodhisattva establishes contact with people by speaking in an emotionally positive manner, not being afraid of giving expression of affection for others. Loving speech is an expression of delight in other people's spiritual potential. And, well, I think we create atmospheres with our speech. One of the primary ways we create atmospheres is through speech, and we can create a positive atmosphere. A good example of that is rejoicing. So rejoicing can be, exhortation to rejoice can be found in Bhante's earliest seminars. He really emphasised that early on in his seminars. And we carry that tradition on in Sukhavati at birthdays. At birthdays, we have cake and tea and all of that, but which is really nice. But also, we have this rejoicing, which it always lifts the room, always lifts the atmosphere of the room, invariably, no matter what state you're in, because you're rejoicing people's good. And so that sparks off the good, really, doesn't it, if you're talking about it. And if you're out of connection with them, it makes them more into more of a three-dimensional human being again. It kind of rehydrates them in your mind. It rehydrates them. And receiving, of course, can be very positive, but it's also a practice. And I was thinking also when I came originally to Sukhavati, exposed to this rejoicing, and I would always be thinking, but what do they really think? You know, what, that's all fine, but what else, you know? So what I realised is, it's really working against this kind of evolutionary hardwiring, isn't it? Rejoicing, this evolutionary hardwiring of kind of threat and, competitiveness and so on. I don't know if this is controversial. Tell me after. But I think also loving speech definitely should be applied to the written word. And I've been increasingly questioning whether the internet, Facebook, and all that is the right medium to handle disputes in the spiritual community. Because of its inability to transmit nuance and, it kind of encourages a kind of quick fire reaction, doesn't it? So, I'm not on Facebook. I haven't quite kept up with, to that extent, with the technological revolution, but I do emails enough to know how difficult it is. And, My method is to write a very honest email in the old honest sense of the word, and then just put it in the draft box. Just put it in the draft box and leave it there, and just leave it there, and just move on. So my draft box is it's an awful place to visit. I think we can encourage each other to engage in loving speech. The further means of unification employed by the Bodhisattva is beneficial activity. And Bhante says on this that the Bodhisattva benefits people by inspiring them, sparking them off, by communicating to them the emotional creativity, the excitement, the sheer adventure of the spiritual life. Which I thought lovely, actually. And I think we can express beneficial activity through our culture, through our Trivatna culture. And then Subhuti, in What is the Order, was talking about our institutions, our shared institutions, as being, well, I don't know if he quite said it this way, but paraphrasing it, as being our institutions providing as big a surface area for Kalyana Mitratara as possible, and developing the best in these institutions, and finding situations for intense engagement. And this kind of sense of a movement, this cultural movement, which can have a broader cultural impact, I think we do have this the culture to offer of friendship, particularly friendship of connectedness, and I think that's again that's countercultural. I think it really addresses the prevailing kind of disease of our times, which is this kind of isolation and disconnection, and emphasis on kind of individuality. The other beneficial activity we can really express is through our practices. And so I've been teaching a bit more since I've come back from ordination. And I found I really had to dig deeper into the practices that we do have to share and inspire and to spark others off. I really feel I can only spark others off to the extent I engage with the practices. And of course, rituals is the same. In our community, we have lots and lots of rituals. Life is made up of rituals in a certain way, but these are positive rituals, aren't they, of these rejoicing at birthdays, forgiveness, a ritual when somebody leaves the community, welcoming rituals, meditating together, washing up even together. And, I think they're all expressions of our desire to go for refuge and to live happily together. But again, they're really only enlivening to the extent we engage with them. So, we express beneficial activity through what's best in our culture and enlivening our practices so that we do have something vital to express. And finally, the fourth Samgraha Vastu is exemplification. So this is the last thing I'll talk about. Bante again. The Bodhisattva's behaviour is consistent with his teaching. Teaching the Dharma, living the Dharma, so that we communicate ourselves, being as honest as possible, rejoicing in our successes, confessing our failures, embodying the process of spiritual development itself. I think we can exemplify service to something bigger than us, the way we come together, our communities around the LBC all contribute like really, really strongly to LBC life. And I think that people see that, people that come into the sense, they see that and respond to that. They respond to that sense of people working together for something bigger than them. And then we can embody the process of spiritual development itself. And this is one of my favourite stories because I don't know where I'd be without this story. So I actually came along as a student to the LBC and I really liked it. I never came back for about 20 years. I don't know why, but when I did come back, or 15 years, when I did come back, I saw Maitreya Bandhu. The very first exposure was Maitreya Bandhu teaching the Honeyball Sutta, drawing a flip chart, quite messy kind of flip chart of what Papancha was and all of this. And I just remember seeing a man who, just exemplified something. He was kind of humorous, vulnerable, confident. And I just thought, oh, he knows what he's talking about. So finally, there's someone who knows what they're talking about. And I went up to him afterwards and asked him, could I have that flip chart, the thing that he'd been writing. He looked slightly, right. He said, of course. And I put it up on my wall. And 6 years later, I was ordained by him. So 6 years later, I was ordained by him. And I suppose my understanding has grown where his mind has come from. His mind is kind of flown down from Bante. He'd be very clear about that himself, that his thinking has kind of flowed from Bante's. So in 7 weeks of teaching the Journey in a Guide, which is his course at Brixton, and it's just a delight to kind of immerse myself in his mind, if you see what I mean, and see that mind has also come been immersed in Bante's mind as well. So it's kind of really excites me, and it makes me want to really exemplify that same kind of spirit that moved me when I first came along. So that first sense of, oh, there's somebody that knows what they're talking about, but it's not the words, is it? It's something else that's expressed. So that's what I kind of aspire to teach in those courses. And so in the spirit of discipleship, I hope I can live out Bante's system in my older life and make that my actual life. And so finally, in conclusion, I think that developing harmony with friends and brethren is a radical practice. I think it's a countercultural practice. I think it's a transformative practice. And I'd like to take it increasingly seriously. And I've enjoyed this opportunity to reflect on that.